Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
It is not Greg Corumbus today. I am Rich McFadden in for Greg Corumbus here at Radio America, along with National Review's Jim Garrity for your Monday Three Martini Lunch. And, Jim, we got a handful today here, it looks like. Starting out with Hillary. If she looks at today's poll, she might not be too happy, huh?
Yeah. This is the latest from Fox News. And for like, oh, it's Fox News. You know, look, this is, you know, a sample. It's 39% Democrats, 40% Republicans, 18% Independents. Some might quibble with those numbers. But the end result is that Hillary is losing to just about everybody in the head-to-head matchup. They have her beating Bernie Sanders, but then the candidate who's doing best against Hillary in this poll is Marco Rubio, ahead 50% to 42%. Trump, Carson, Jeb Bush, Ted Cruz, Chris Christie, all would be leading head-to-head, which was taken after the Paris terrorist attacks. And Carly Fiorina would be tying 42% each. Now, the interesting thing is that they have some independents saying they're leaning towards the Republican side. A lot of people, including Joe Scarborough this morning, speculating this is the Paris effect. This is people suddenly, you know, look, the top issue to a lot of people, you know, usually in these types of polls is the economy. Nothing like seeing more than 100 people get killed in Paris to suddenly put ISIS and terrorism front and center in people's minds. And people are undoubtedly concerned about that, and that has seen a pretty significant shift in that. Also worth noting, Donald Trump is the still leader in this role in this primary race. He's got 28%. Ben Carson has 18%.
Why do you think Rubio does so well in this poll?
Well, it's worth noting in the poll of Republican primary voters, he's at 14%, tied for third with Ted Cruz. But look, this is a guy who, since the moment he came into the Senate, has been focusing on foreign policy stuff. This was a big issue for him when he was running for Senate. Since he's been there, he's been on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. You know, I think he always is of the hawkish persuasion. And there was a kind of a whole group of Republicans who were coming up in that wave of 2010 who were not tied to the Bush administration.
Yeah.
And a lot of them went into different areas. But Rubio was the guy who was still working. Hey, wait a minute. Terrorism is still out there. Threats are still out there. And you see him talking about this and Putin and some other things that aren't necessarily kitchen table issues, perhaps in suspicion that a day like this was going to come and, you know, America was going to need a wartime leader.
Well, that kind of leads us into our bad martini of the day, and that 13% of Syrian refugees are believed to be ISIS sympathizers?
Yeah. Now, this is a November 2014 study, so it's conceivably say, oh, maybe it's changed a lot in the past year. But this is from the Doha-based Arab Center for Research and Policy Studies. They managed to get in there and interview them. Now, here's the good news. 83% said their view of ISIS is negative or, quote, negative to some extent. What's the positive side of ISIS?
That
what's
makes
the,
me feel you know, better.
You know, they're terrible butchers who slaughter innocent people, but they're really snazzy dressers. But the other problem is that this means 13% of Syrian refugees say their view of ISIS is positive or positive to some extent. And you look at this, you go down a bunch of other groups across the Middle East, you know, the number of people who are positive usually is in the teens. You get 24% in Palestine, about 13% in Tunisia, 6% in Iraq. I mean, here's like, look, the good news is it's not a lot. The vast majority, 70%, 80% in Iraq, 98% in Lebanon, think badly of ISIS. The problem is if one out of every 10 refugee is a sympathizer to ISIS and likes them and thinks they're doing good stuff, then is it safe to assume maybe 1 in 100 is an active ISIS agent or potential ISIS? Like, you know, the problem is like even if you bring, you know, even if it's 1 in 100, even if it's 1 in 1,000, if we're going to take in, we've taken in about 1,200 so far through this program. The plan is to take, 15,000? There were some people who were talking that we should go up to 65,000.
Right, 65,000, right.
Well, 1 in 1,000 means you're bringing in 65 terrorists.
Here's my question.
What is a problem?
If you support ISIS, why are you a refugee? Why are you leaving?
That's a good point. I guess
it would seem to me that you would want to stay and help.
If you really, really hate Assad, and somehow, I mean, some of this is general. Look, we're looking for logic where you're not going to find any logic.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, these are the same people who believe that the Holocaust is a myth and Hitler didn't finish the job simultaneously. So, but my suspicion is that conceivably you might have a positive view of ISIS if you're really, really mad at Assad. and you see him as the devil and you give ISIS credit for fighting against Assad, or you're just basic across the board anti-Western, you know, I'm fleeing my country because it's a hellhole because people are getting killed all the time. I want to come to the West, but I still hate the West, and thus I'm going to destroy
it. Well, and then all of this kind of leads us into our crazy martini is that Brussels is basically on lockdown today. And one of the reasons it's on lockdown is because they've taken a lot of these ISIS and sympathizers and basically said, yeah, go live anywhere. And they own a neighborhood there now.
Yeah. You know, terrorist attacks are the worst possible scenario. I think living on lockdown until further notice has got to be the second worst scenario to come out of this.
Right.
I'm sure the Brussels police and authorities are doing the very best they can. They said more than 1,000 men are involved in a manhunt right now. They did 5 more raids. They've searched nearly 20 properties. 21 people have been detained. But the guy who they're looking for, Salah Abdeslam, who was, you know, in connection with the Paris terrorist attacks, right, was not taken into custody. And, you know, really frustratingly, the interior minister said, well, he must have a lot of support on our soil.
Yeah, right. That wouldn't scare you too much, would it?
Yeah.
The most wanted man in the world, nobody will give him up.
Yeah. You know, schools are closed. All the public transportation is closed. They're telling people to stay in their houses. Now, NATO is based in Brussels. Now, they haven't shut down NATO headquarters,
that's right,
but they've
yeah.
asked some staff to work from home. There's about 2 million people who live in this area. Remember when Boston was on lockdown for one day after the Boston bombing?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, imagine that going on for so far 3 days, and there's really no sense of when this is going to end. And you want to talk about paralyzing a city. This has got to be the next best thing to the terrorists, and short of... you know, successfully killing lots of infidels.
And this is exactly what they want. They want to be able to shut you down, make you spend money, make you lose money. And they've basically put fear in this city to lock it down.
Yeah. Look, it's easy for us to say it from here, although obviously we are not immune to the threat of terrorism. But I remember looking at this and thinking, like, remember the, you know, with a lot of discussion post 9/11, like, what do you do if there's somebody who's got a box cutter on a plane?
Right.
I remember thinking you could solve this if you gave everybody a box cutter when they got on the plane. Well, sit down, Muhammad Atta. I got one too. Okay, sit down. You know, go back, eat your peanuts. This is back when they served peanuts on planes. Anyway, the point is, like, because you can't harden every single target out there, you can't do it for every single school, every single concert hall, every single restaurant, every single bar, any place people come together in crowds. The only real option is to self-harden, so to speak, these targets by creating a whole bunch of people who can shoot back at terrorists who want to do terrible things. Otherwise, you're just left in this you know, like, frozen stasis of this.
Yeah.
So hopefully Brussels catches the guys they want to and they get back to something resembling normal lives. But I think you got to look at this as being, this is pretty close to a major victory for the terrorists. They've shut down the headquarters city of NATO for 3 days and God knows when things go back to normal.
Well, it happens here in Washington on a fairly regular basis where they'll shut down a road or a building or something like that. Not to the scale of Brussels, but I mean, people leave a box of broccoli on the side of the road and they think it's it's some kind of explosive device, and they shut the road down for 5 hours while they investigate the broccoli.
Yeah, it's perfectly ridiculous, Rich. And you know why? The thing is, you should just avoid that just because it's broccoli.
Yeah, exactly. Stick with the French fries. All right. All right. Well, there's your three martinis for today, the good, bad, and the crazy. I'm Rich McFadden in for Greg Corumbus, along with Jim Garrity from National Review Online. And we'll see you tomorrow for your three martini lunch.